Hello, I hope you have been enjoying the Problematic Badass Female Tropes series. We thought we'd put out this special short episode here with Todd Robbins. You might remember him from the Bad Business miniseries we did before. Todd has started publishing a literary journal called Vautrin, and I thought I would bring him on to tell us about the magazine and, you know, drum up some support for locally produced literary endeavors, because, you know, people do things and they should get some recognition for it. So let's listen to Todd tell us about Vautrin and where you can get it. It's, of course, at Watermark Books. Links in the show notes. So here we are, Todd Robbins. We haven't really sat down and chatted into microphones since we did the Bad Business podcast. And since then, you've put out a literary journal that we're going to talk about here for a while today. I was surprised. I was thinking about this today. We've known each other for 14 years now. That's fucking crazy.
It's, yes. Was I still in my mid-30s back then? I guess so.
Yeah, I was in my early 30s. I mean, that's just the way it goes. Now we're a bunch of old men. So you came to me with this idea late last year.
It was in November.
It was in November?
Right around Thanksgiving.
Tell me you were thinking about that. Now, I was a bit, I'm going to tell, I guess before we get too far in here, is there a slightly different bio of yourself? Did you like to tell the my five listeners out there?
Your five listeners. Listeners. We didn't expand it beyond five with the bad business.
Well, you know, the numbers have been increasing. You know, the consistent thing with the miniseries has gotten up. I think we're now up to something like 8,000 downloads. So, you know,
that's good.
How many of them are bots? I don't know.
What did I tell you the last time? I guess we could add that I did the Bad Business podcast with you as part of my bio.
Right, right.
I don't know.
So, okay, so Lynn, are you originally from Kansas?
Yes.
Born and raised?
From I'd call it a little oil patch town out by Great Bend.
Yeah, yeah.
Sort of take out a map of Kansas, close your eyes and point to the very center of the state.
And is it somewhere around Salina then?
It's west of Salina.
Right.
Yep.
So,
and then I went to K-State, of course.
Yep.
We talked about that, I think, already.
Yeah, a little bit. This is just to catch up people that didn't listen to that one yet, and because now you've got a new venture with the journal here that's just launched. So, and I don't know that we've actually talked about this much, even in the 14 years. When did you know you were going to be a writer, that you were going to have a literary life?
I got started in, like everybody else, probably in high school, with Gatsby and I would say Gatsby was a turning point for me.
Oh, yeah?
Sophomore, I think it was a class called 20th Century Popular Culture. And we did, we read Turnbull's biography of Scott Fitzgerald and did the whole Jazz Age thing and read The Great Gatsby and This Side of Paradise and all those Fitzgerald novels. That was kind of the start for me.
Right, right. Did you guys read about that generation's... I guess journal culture, their magazine culture, how they're the, because there was, Ezra Pound did a journal for a while, and I know Gertrude Stein probably did one as well. Everybody kind of had, you know, basically a mimeograph type of thing and hand typed and copied in some fashion, just because this kind of the way literary movements always start off is nobody wants to publish people, so they do it themselves.
I think so. You just, if you're waiting around, then you might as well just jump in.
Yeah. So what finally was the breaking point for you? Because I know we've been, in the 14 years we've known each other, we've both been struggling to get published, and the door hasn't cracked open for you yet. It should. It should have happened a long time ago. You've done some pretty good work that I've read, so...
You mean as far as making this magazine go?
Yeah, what was the breaking point? What finally kind of got you out of the...
I just had a strong idea back in November to do it, and I just did it. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily call it a breaking point. It was just that week I was in that mode.
Yeah.
I was kind of in idea mode that week, even more so than usual. And it was a very strong impulse to found this magazine. And I just went and did it. And
yeah.
Didn't really think it all the way through. Just launched it.
Those are some of the best plans, aren't they? The kind of half-assed, fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants ones that...
Figure it out later.
Right.
Stay with the idea part.
Yeah.
And then figure out the other stuff later.
Yeah.
It's not how a business person would probably do it, but if you're doing a literary venture,
right,
you're going to muddle through anyway, so...
Oh, sure, sure. I was a bit surprised. You sent me to the bookstore website to read the blurb about the journal. And of course, you know, you've got your intro in here, your note from the editor. And I was a little surprised. In all this time, I never would have guessed that you had a hint of the magic realism in you. And that's what this feels like.
That note?
Yeah.
It's either that or it's tongue in cheek. You can take it either way. Do I really mean it?
Yeah, you really mean it? But
it's one way of explaining how I got the idea, right?
Being visited by a ghost.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that was surprising. I was surprised by that.
Right.
Your humor is either usually rather dry and grumpy.
This one's it's a different way. Yeah.
So what was the experience like? I mean, because you did help way back when I did the project for New Mythology for that. What was this particular experience like trying to put this together?
It was an enjoyable experience. I mean, as I suggested in this note, in the editor's note, Scott Phillips, I talked to him early on. He sounded interested. I talked to you, a few of the other people I know.
Right.
And then I started, Albert Goldbarth gave me some good ideas.
Oh, good.
And then I started just thinking about how to maybe build outward a little bit and get some out-of-town writers in.
Right.
And so it became a sort of an exercise in figuring out how am I going to find some good writers who are going to be interested in this particular journal. And so I ended up keeping in mind that the magazine is very focused on, as I mentioned in the publishing page or the publisher's page, the title page, mystery and crime fiction or gritty urban fiction is kind of the theme of it, the type of aesthetic. So I went through Best American Mystery Stories last year and found, you know, you've got the honorable mention, the noteworthy writers. And I kind of contacted a few of them and ended up getting contributions from Sylvia Warsh in Canada.
Right.
And Thomas Pluck, who lives in New Jersey and has a novel coming out next fall.
Yeah, I saw
called Riff Raff.
Saw that. That looks interesting. I've always been impressed by the willingness of writers to be helpful at these situations. Without naming any names, was there anybody that was kind of
blew me off?
Yeah, blew you off or aggressively declined you? Because I had a couple of experiences like that with the project, just people that I thought would be interested in it somehow kind of coming back to me like, well, you know, without this and this in place, I really wouldn't feel comfortable just donating something to, you know, strangers off the cuff.
Let's see. Lawrence Block wrote back and said, Lawrence Block, just for the hell of it, I contacted Lawrence Block.
So you're going to drop names on that one.
I'll drop names.
All right.
He doesn't care. He sends me his freaking newsletter. Anyway, I contacted Lawrence Block and he wrote back.
Yeah.
He just said he doesn't write that much anymore and what he does write has a place.
Right.
And then I almost wrote back and said, hey, Lawrence, can I put your letter in my journal? Have a category called the one that got away in each issue.
Well, that would be interesting.
That would be interesting.
At least he wasn't kind of a jerk.
Oh, he's a nice guy.
Yeah.
I've written to him before because.
I'm surprised he's still alive because I remember reading his column in Writer's Digest when I was in high school 30 years ago.
He's been publishing. He's one of the most published mystery crime fiction writers out there, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Guy was just a writing machine.
Well, at least, like I said, at least he was nice.
Yeah. I asked him, you know, I said, even a sketch or something would be fun.
Right.
But he just, you know, wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
But he did write back.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah. Other than that, there were a couple of people who just didn't respond, and that was okay.
Yeah.
A couple of New Yorkers that probably just thought, well, that sounds like a decent idea, but sounds like a bit more of a regional journal, at least for now. And
yeah,
there just wasn't that much upside, I would think, for them to contribute to it, to be honest.
Right, right.
So that was fine. I mean, look, anytime you do something like this, you're going to have some people say no,
or
you
might
as well not even try.
Yeah, yeah. There's, what are you going to do? There's no way to get around it. You just got to bite the bullet and go with it. So your production, now this thing looks slick. This is nice looking.
Thank you.
So, you know, there's with, if I remember right, you went through Ingram Spark, right? To produce this or something like that?
Interesting story about that. That was the plan.
That was the plan? So how?
And I went on, and the day before we were going to send this thing to print, I had filled out a form at Ingram. I think it's called Lightning Source.
Uh-huh.
So we're throwing that name around now.
Oh, well.
Yeah, well. And I thought I had filled out the form and done what I needed to do, and that we were just going to be able to go do this, download or upload it and
right.
finish. Well, in the... For some reason, I had it in the brain that when we uploaded it and actually filed the order, mm-hmm. that was when we would get the ISBN.
Oh.
And I found out that day that, you know, you got to get that from the Library of Congress. I don't know why I had forgotten that, having worked in the book business as long as I have. Or just, never had to do it.
Right.
And I was so focused on putting the content of the magazine together, I completely just overlooked it.
Yeah.
Well, to do it with them, as far as I could tell, we needed, because they load their stuff into various book-selling sites mm-hmm. and all that stuff.
Right.
And it was just too late. So we had to figure out another printing house that day.
Oh, wow.
Because, you know, enough time had elapsed that we really needed to just finish this thing.
Right, right.
And so Beth Golay just... was really fast on her feet and found us another printing house that day. Basically bailed me out.
Right. It's good to have connections, you know?
Good to have savvy friends. So, yes. And I think they did a good job.
Yeah. Who was it that you, if you don't mind sharing, who was it that, that put this together for you then? That, well, you had two ways. You had,
Well, interesting. It's got a very similar name. I want to say Lightning Press.
Okay.
I've got it in there on the box. It's very, I don't think they wrote their name on it anywhere even.
Mm-mm.
I thought they would, but they didn't. They don't want to be associated with it.
Well, you are inspired by a criminal element here.
So, they're just flat out not.
Yeah. Are you going to use them going forward?
I am.
Well, that's sharp. That looks good.
I am, because they were very, the difference was this, they're a smaller operation,
mm-hmm.
and so when we called them, they actually answered the phone.
Oh, wow.
Instead of giving us the runaround with the answering service stuff.
Right.
And they did not require an ISBN to do the print job, so that was essential since I had blown that part of it. And they just, you know, they were easy to do. It was very easy to upload it and mm-hmm. do everything. And I felt like they were going to do a good job. You never know until, as I mentioned yesterday, when I was waiting for FedEx to bring it
right
up until the moment when I unpacked the box, you're wondering.
Right.
And I had it. I'm like this
on
something that I've put in enough time on, you know, there was, in my mind, there was about a 15% chance that I was going to open the box and it was going to be Evelyn's family genealogy. And, you know, Votron was going to be down on Evelyn's front porch with she and her sister drinking their sweet tea. And then we were going to have to get that rearranged. But it worked out. They actually sent us Votron. So.
Yeah. Little anxiety release when you get it into your hand, huh?
Yeah, it was one of those deals. You open the box, you're kind of in that state for about an hour when you're just looking at it, making sure everything's where it's supposed to be. And there aren't any pages upside down. And
right.
Everything seems to be the way it's supposed to be.
They did
but if you like the look of it, Beth Goulet is really the person to mention here, because she did the design. She nice. Came up with all the, you know, any of the fonts and all the style, particularly that we used on the table of contents.
Oh, cool.
She did all of it. And she's just very grateful for her help on this. Yeah.
Beth Goulet, host of Marginalia with KMUW here in Wichita. So,
yes.
Is she going to have you on the show? Hint, hint. Beth, who sometimes listens to this podcast.
I hope so, but I'm not going to. I don't know. We'll see.
We'll have to push for it. I mean, it's a little chance to promote it. We should just we'll drop her a note.
We'll see what she says. Exactly. I don't want to ask her for any more favors. She's already done me a bunch on this magazine. So,
well, that's cool. So let's talk a little bit about the content. I have not had a chance to read much more than the poems and some fragments of the stories. Because like I said, I was in Montana most of last week. And
what were you doing in Montana?
Oh, a work conference.
Oh, work.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wasn't anything fun, but I did get to look at some pretty mountains and there was no humidity.
That's nice.
Yeah. So I got back late Thursday night.
And it wasn't raining?
No, wasn't raining. See? It was maybe about 75 to 80 degrees, no humidity. I mean, it was beautiful. Nice, pleasant weather. You could wear pants and not sweat out your butt crack.
Be nice to be up there in the summer.
Yeah. So I came back late Thursday and did not get to the bookstore on Friday. So I picked this up before I came over to talk to you. But let's talk about some of the content, because you've got quite a wide spectrum of stuff here, and it all looks really interesting. You've got fiction from Scott Phillips and Sylvia, what is that, Maltesh Warsh?
That's probably how I would pronounce it. I haven't asked her, but...
And Thomas Pluck with his book Riff, from the excerpt from his book Riff Raff.
Which is coming out in the fall.
Excellent. And then some essays and book reviews by some people we know.
Yeah, right.
That jerk Jason Quinn Millott. Susan Gushow, Andrew Larson, and Paul DeFecto. Our co-host from Bad Business.
Yep. Paul's in here.
Managed to snag some Albert Goldbarth poetry.
Have you read it yet?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Yes, I did. It's a... I almost feel molested.
Have you noticed... You won't have noticed it yet on the first read. Did you notice the onion rhyme scheme?
In Goldbarth's poem?
In Goldbarth's poem.
No, I did not.
See, it's going to sneak up on you later.
Okay.
He's got an onion rhyme scheme that you won't pick up on the first read, probably. But it's a trickier poem than even you realize the first time through. Oh,
cool. I will give it a second read. Got Susanna Guthrie, a new poet, secret bookseller.
Right on.
And who else we have here?
And there's a...
Scott Richard.
Scott Richard from Marysville. That is sort of an Ezra Pound. You mentioned Ezra Pound earlier. You know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. And is this his first published poem as well, or something?
I think he's published some other poems through the years, here and there, in a couple of probably pretty obscure journals. I don't know. I haven't talked to him that much about it.
Did you know him at K-State, or is he a more recent...
Of course.
Oh, you did? All right.
Yes. Okay, so there are three K-Staters in this.
Little alumni party.
Right, you, Fecto, and Scott Richard are in there. Scott sat in the poetry classes with us.
Right on.
So it was obviously, as we mentioned in the Bad Business podcast, you're 3 or 4 years younger than Paul and I. Yep. Actually, I think you're 5 years younger than us.
Yeah, 47, 48 this year.
Yeah. You're not that much. I was born in 67 and you were born in
71.
71.
Yeah. So what?
We're both Gen Xers.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Boomers won't get out of the way.
I know. Losers. Greedy little bastards.
Yeah. Exactly.
No, but it's a nice. And so I do have a question here. The story from The Black Mask in 1920.
Right.
That's public domain stuff.
It's public domain.
Nice. That was a good catch.
Thank you.
I think throwing a little harkening back and
Right. And it fits the theme of the magazine too.
Yep. Are you going to continue to do that in the future?
I think that we can do it for a while because it's, well, I can probably find some other magazines too, besides Black Mask. The Black Mask, I think, started in 1920.
Yep.
And it's anything pre-1923 for the public domain. That's so you've got some stuff to pick from there. Mm-hmm. Because those came out once a month, I think, back then.
Right.
So we'll have some things to pick from in the Black Mask, and then I need to kind of look around for similar type old magazines that might be out there to see what I can, just to see what's out there. So if not Black Mask, we're going to try to have something like that in every issue.
Nice. Good. Because I'm always, you know, interested in I guess you call
fun.
It. Yeah, and literary lineage, because that kind of ties this venture into some historical reference, kind of what is stuff like Black Mask, is that what kind of inspired this and on top of Balzac?
It's kind of a combination
of
Black Mask and, of course, the Bad Business stuff that we discussed. And then Balzac kind of is an early sort of almost a forerunner of those folks in a way, because he's got somebody like Vautrin running around in his novels with a... Well, he's a character who could be in some of the novels in the 20th century.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's, what is it? Someone was saying that fiction is a trouble generating machine. It's a way for humanity to rehearse its response to trouble. And crime in particular is one of the more prevalent forms of trouble we encounter in the real world. And good, well-written crime fiction does have sometimes a bit of a stronger focus on rehearsing for trouble in the psyche than probably literary fiction does, which can get lost up its own asshole sometimes.
We talked about it in the other podcast, just the gray area sometimes that you even find in literary fiction where there's a bit of an overlap. Mm-hmm. Where it could almost be shelved in the mystery or crime section. But then, as we mentioned in the other podcast, there will be an element or two about the story that puts it over in the literary realm.
Right.
Ultimately, it has a different aim.
Yeah.
And, of course, to be clear, that type of story is a good fit for Vautrin. It's kind of a mix of those things, as I tried to pick up on just in that brief note on the title page. What's it say? I think it says gritty. What does it say? The magazine is geared toward gritty urban fiction, crime, mystery fiction, and satire. And then what I hope to do eventually, and I've got some reviewers signed up to help with the second issue, the book reviews and the essays, they don't all have to sort of be in that realm. I mean, yours is going to be a little bit broader.
Yeah.
And the magazine can be a broader too. But the overall theme, even of the book reviews, if possible, is going to be more sort of aligned with the type of fiction that we're publishing.
Something kind of outlawish, something kind of...
Yeah, just in that realm.
Dark, a little beyond the law, maybe.
Right. And I have to say that the only thing I plagiarized you probably picked... I don't know if you picked up on it, but when it came time to write the title page... I said, Jason had kind of a very concise one on the project. So now you're just now finding out that your sort of your framework.
Yeah.
I didn't have time to, you covered the bases.
Yeah.
You know, so I just kind of went with it and put my own words in there. It works.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean.
I didn't need it. You don't, for this journal right now, I don't need all the gobbledygook. And yours was very to the point as well.
Yeah, I was trying just to...
hit the main point.
Get some exposure for some people I thought needed it. You know, would you mind reading the editor's note here for the audience?
Oh, sure. One morning last November, I was visited by Honoré de Balzac. The great Frenchman has long been a favorite. I admire how he knocked out 90 novels in 20 years while in the throes of financial difficulties. He eluded his creditors by moving between luxurious hotels. He ran on coffee between midnight and six. His books are worldly and dense. He came to me as I donned my brown herringbone jacket. "You've asked me for guidance, but you rarely take my advice," he said. "I pointed out a while back your writing would improve if you wore a burgundy velvet smoking jacket during composition. They don't sell those in Wichita," I reminded him. Balzac is unaccustomed to Midwesterners. He lit a cigar. "Here's the last thing I'm telling you. Found a literary journal after my criminal mastermind character, Vautrin. Ask Scott Phillips to contribute." "Won't I need money?" "You think I let that stop me when I gave it hell in the 19th century?" I emailed Phillips about Balzac's idea. He wrote back a few hours later. "I'll do it for Honoré." Next up, a natter with Baudelaire. The poet has the skinny on velvet smoking jackets.
Maybe, yeah, yeah. The tone of that, and then the blurb on the website was a little. It was different from, I think I said this earlier, from of other stuff of yours I've read, and it tickled me.
I see what you mean.
You know, I think maybe some of the tone you got to that tone a little bit in some of the manuscripts of yours I've read, but it hasn't been consistently in that.
That novel that you read, the second novel that you read, was sort of trying to go there and never quite made it.
Right.
And these little notes take more of a leap, I guess.
Well, that's good. By the way, how is the writing going? Your own writing.
Since I started this magazine,
yeah,
this magazine's taken up more time than I thought it would. So I'm going to have to, whether you consider the, I do juggle real work.
Right. Both of us writers with day jobs.
Writers with day jobs, and now I've got this magazine. So it's going to be a test of my organization, and just, I'm going to have to get a little better organized.
Yeah.
So without a doubt. Because one thing I found, and it took a little more time to edit this than I thought it would.
Right. Yeah.
I think you tried to tell me that back in November.
My editing was decidedly sloppy with the project for New Mythology. It was very seat of the pants. So you're doing a much better job than I am. Or was. That's why I went with the podcast, and I have now a producer who I just let her fix my messes.
Good strategy.
Yeah. I am doing a better job of learning how to record, which
you
is why
I have less stuff here. I've noticed.
Like I said, I shrank my kit.
You had that whole board the last time.
Yep. Yeah. Now I got my little travel one-on-one kit. I'm not doing multiple people with Skype involved anymore.
Good plan.
Yeah. Really good plan. That's the best part of the whole plan.
Oh, so you never have more than one person on a podcast?
The way it's looking right now, except when I do the live ones. We've got another live one coming up in July, Saturday the 13th. And I'm actually on Monday night meeting with the performers for that to iron out the last details. So keep an eye out for that. We're going to have it in a public place this time. So we're going to invite the whole city.
Excellent.
And I would like to have you there with the magazine.
Very good. This is July the 13th.
Yep.
Excellent. All right.
So.
Sounds like a plan.
Let's see. What else should we talk about on the?
I was just looking at it. That Andrew Larson guy that.
Yeah.
He did the artwork too for the piece in the back. He is a friend of.
For the Trump Tower piece?
For the Trump Tower piece. What does it say? He's a painter. He's a graphic designer. I think he has his own business. I shouldn't be saying that without checking with him first. Anyway, and he has the essay about Nosgard in there. And then he ended up helping a little bit with that illustration, too. So.
Oh, good. It's a very visually pleasing and beautiful little journal. So nice job on that.
Thank you. It came out, I'm happy with it.
Good.
I'd like to fatten it up just a little bit for the second, you know, for the next issue. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I mean, I don't know. Is that, it's...
Yeah, no, it's a good size.
It's not bad.
Not intimidating.
Right. It's not so thick that... Some of those journals are so thick that you almost realize you're not going to get through them all.
Right. So for those people that might be... I have a sizable... download presence in California. So where can our California people go to get copies if they're interested in this?
I would recommend, since I don't have a web page, I'm not on Facebook, I'm not on Twitter, go to watermarkbooks.com.
Okay.
And if you go to the staff picks page, you'll see my name, Todd Robbins, as one of the staff. And on my staff picks page, there is a link to that jacket copy you were talking about with an order, with, and right there, you just click on it.
All right. I will make sure we get that link in the show notes as well so that people can navigate to it pretty easily.
Right. And that's the best way to get there, I would say.
Excellent. Do you plan on developing or getting a website out there in the future to make a little only easier?
Only if I think I really need to.
Okay.
I mean, and maybe I do, but the whole idea behind this was to sort of be, come at it from another angle.
Right. Kind of go old school.
Kind of go old school and see if you get a word of mouth interest going.
Right on.
So it's not impossible that I'll do a web page, but it's not anything I'm very interested in doing. And I don't know, to spend money on a web page.
There's some inexpensive, really easy ones out there. I use Squarespace these days, so
right.
That's my half-assed sort of, I'm not getting paid for it plug, but
it can be done.
Yeah, and it's really easy. It's not that expensive. It's less expensive than my old host, so.
Maybe it needs to be done eventually.
Yeah.
It's probably not going to happen this year, but
right.
Like that.
Yeah. Best to get your footing first, establish a reputation, I think. I might have when I did the project for New Mythology, might have bitten off a bit more than I was capable of handling with all the bells and whistles and...
It was very ambitious to be doing a quarterly right out of the chute. Having just done this, and it took me,
yeah.
I got the idea, as we mentioned, in mid-November, and the magazine was published yesterday,
yep.
June the 7th, and it took that long to just get everything done.
Yep. And then I insisted on, you know, hand-binding everything like a jackass.
Some of those were really interesting.
They were really pretty.
I've got all of them.
I especially like the one that came in the envelope. That was my favorite one. It had the CD in it.
They have more of a chapbook feel to them.
Yeah. And the red and white one was the other one that was really pretty.
I remember it.
So
I've got them all.
Yeah, a little short-lived thing.
Stashed around here. How many did you do all together? Was it a year's worth or even a little more than that?
We did almost 2 years' worth. There were six print ones and one that was entirely online. So we did almost 2 years worth. We did eight. We didn't do eight. We did seven.
It was a good magazine.
If I'd been a little bit smarter, a little bit older and wiser, there would have been a whole lot of things I would have done differently. But it was a learning experience. That's for certain.
I'm not sure that were printing houses such as the one I just used for this, were they even up and running back then to the extent that they are now?
The POD type of stuff?
Just somebody that you could afford, you could use. I mean, this was very affordable.
Really?
So it was.
Yeah, I don't remember. I know I'd looked at some POD stuff and didn't like the price and didn't like how it looked because it was still very much, you know, white paper and free font type of thing. It wasn't anything that really looked that sharp, you know, like a lot of those old self-published books that we had in the store in around 2005, 2007.
Right. We were greatly helped by the fact that Beth had the publishing program. And so everything was done when we sent it, including the cover art, the whole thing was done. And all they had to do was just print it.
Yep. What was she using? Was it an Adobe thing or a...
You'd have to ask her.
All the technical inside dirt that people are like going, oh my God, why are they talking about this? Well,
they're interested.
Yeah, hopefully they're interested. Hopefully they're thinking maybe of starting their own because with the way our society is going right now and the massive conglomeration of publishers into four or five big units, it's really squeezing out that potential for the small voice, for the regional voice, for new writers. And one of the reasons I'm really glad you did this is that I feel like, you know, when I first came back to Wichita in 2004, that there was not a lot of this sense of there was a bit of a DIY sense going on, but not one of inclusion, if that makes sense. And I've always been struggling with my own ambivalence towards Wichita, towards being here, and my own desire to build a community. And when you came to me with this idea, I was tickled that someone else was kind of joining the fight in some fashion. And you were doing this journal, which to me seems wildly more brave than doing a podcast. there's an extensive investment on here. A lot of hard work goes into this type of stuff, and you've pulled off a great looking magazine. I know I've said that a lot, but this is sharp looking, Todd.
Thank you, Jason. I'm happy with it too. I think it's all right.
So let's get people out and read it.
I say so. Go to that website and click on the link.
Yep. Thanks, Todd.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this special episode with Todd Robbins about his new literary journal, Vautrin. Remember, you can get that at Watermark Books. And hey, I hope you have a good summer. We'll be back in the cold months with a new mini-series, this one about toxic masculinity tropes with, you know, Jen. You remember her. So I'll see you in the fall. Hope you enjoy the rest of your summer. We'll be putting together some live shows, so you might want to check back every now and then and see what we've put out. Thanks again.